Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, October 21st, 2017. This is episode 1432. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by WordPress. When you create your small business website on WordPress.com, you make it easier for your customers to find you. WordPress guides you through the process from start to finish. It's easy for you, too. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/TechGuy. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. I know. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. And by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass. They get delivered to your door ready to display right out of the box. And man, they look great. Visit fracture.me and use the code TECH15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. I don't know why I said digital photography. Maybe because Scott Wilkinson is in the house and will be joining us in about half an hour to talk about home theater. So that doesn't explain it either, does it? Phone number, if you want to talk about tech, that's what I'm here for. So just let's get those phones a-jingling. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You can still call. Just use Skype out or something like that, and you should be able to reach us. 8888-ASK-LEO. We have a website. If you hear stuff, if you're hearing things and you want to know what is that I'm hearing, go to the website. Everything's written down for you. TechGuyLabs.com. You always hear me talking about two-factor authentication, right? You know that that's important, right? You know, it saved me, particularly recently. Two-factor is taking passwords one step farther. The whole problem, and someday we'll solve this problem, but the whole problem, whether you're walking into a bank to cash a check or logging in to Match.com or trying to, you know, pay for something online, is what we call authentication, proving you are you. And if we had a good way of doing this, life would be a lot easier and there'd be less identity theft and we wouldn't have to worry about Equifax and all that stuff. We need a good way. So the ways we have are imperfect. Primarily a password, right? You log in with a password to a website and that proves you're you. If you log into your Amazon account with your email and your password, you can then buy stuff. If you know your email and password, you can buy stuff and send it somewhere else. You can do all sorts of stuff. Problem with passwords, well, there are a couple of them. First of all, we have to remember them. And as passwords proliferated, it got harder and harder to remember them, so we made them easier and easier to remember. Still the number one password in the world is 123456. And then the next number two is 123456 7. So that's a little better. So, because they're hard to remember. But easy to remember means easy to guess and easy to crack. And bad guys have gotten so good because they have very fast computers and software design. They go through all, the first thing they try is the top 1,000 passwords. So, you know, they'd get into monkey 123 like that. And then they try all the dictionary words. By the way, now we've gone for a few seconds. And then the rest of the minute or two is spent trying other things. So unless your password is long, long is good. We've talked about that before. Longer the better. And random, eventually it'll be cracked. If you do some dictionary words, if you use your mother's maiden name and your birth date, eventually those are weak passwords. What's wrong with a very long 24-character completely random password with upper and lowercase letters and numbers and punctuation? What's wrong with that? You can't remember it. Good luck. And you can't remember one, let alone 500. So, and I've told you this before, I'm sure you're doing it by now. You're using a password manager, right, that keeps track of all these long, weird passwords. You remember one long, weird password. That's all you have to remember to unlock your password vault. But the rest, they're generated by and kept track of in a password manager. That's good. That solves a lot of problems. That's better than nothing. The next step, though, is to add a second factor of authentication. So there's three factors. Computer and security geeks like to think of these three factors: something you know, something you have, and something you are. Know, have, are. Something you know is your password. Yeah, only you know that, one hopes. Something you have would be, have you ever seen those pass keys? You know, when you get into a door, or there's pass keys that generate numbers. The Bloomberg terminals, for instance, are protected by a password, but also a card that generates new numbers every 30 seconds, a one-time pass. That's something you have. You have to have that card. Something you are is your fingerprint, your iris scan. It's biometrics. Two-factor is two factors, two of those three factors. And so two-factor is fantastic because, well, and I'll tell you how it saved my bacon. I use two-factor everywhere I can. My bank, for sure. Facebook, Google, Twitter. And the two factors saved me at Twitter because somebody had hacked my domain registrar. No fault of my own, it turned out. There was a flaw in their software that they caught, fortunately, and they called me. They hacked it, and what they did, which is a very clever hack, is I have my email go to the registrar, and then it bounces off the registrar and goes over to Google, goes to my Gmail account. Boing. What they did is they got into the registrar. And they did this to a bunch of people, a lot of podcasters for some reason. And they added a second email redirection. So, boing, it's going to my Gmail. And then, boing, it's also going to the hacker. Why did they do that? Well, because then they go to Twitter or my bank or Facebook and say, I forgot my password. Would you send me a new one? Now, I'm going to get that because it's going to go boing to my Gmail. But it also goes boing to the bad guy. I don't even know it, right? So the bad guy then immediately went to Twitter and said, I forgot my password. I know because I got an email saying, oh, you forgot your password? Click this link to reset it. But he got that email also. He clicked the link to reset it. And then, oh, no, two-factor authentication. He didn't. Twitter text message me a six-digit number. He couldn't get that number. And he couldn't log in. He couldn't change everything. And I, safe, discovered, you know, my registrar called me and said, this boy. And they discovered it. They fixed it. And I went, glad I have second factor. In fact, some people did not and got bit by this guy. Who cares about Twitter? Maybe that was all the guy was interested in. Probably the next step would have been to go after bank accounts and things like that, Amazon. But I turn on two-factor everywhere. There's a problem with the two-factor that Twitter uses, and it kind of bugs me. They send you a text message to your phone. If a really determined attacker wanted to get you, he would get your password, but then he would also call your phone company and say, I lost my phone. Can you send me a new SIM card? What's your address? Well, I've moved too. And this happens all the time. And they get a new SIM card. Now they have your phone number. Now when the text message comes in, they get it. They get it. And all of a sudden, two-factor didn't help you. That's, by the way, a bad way to do two-factor. Well, Google, all of this is a roundabout way to talk about Google's advanced protection, which they just launched this week. For people like, oh, I don't know, the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, or a movie star like Jennifer Lawrence, if people are targets to bad guys, they can turn on the extra super-duper protection. Then to log into any of your Google services, this is free, by the way, but it's also a burden, so I'll tell you what the burden is. To log into any Google service, you have to not only have your password, but you have to have something you have, a mechanical electronic dongle. You don't have to have just one. You have to have two for Google. I have a YubiKey, which is a little USB thing you stick in. You press a button. It generates every 30 seconds a new very long password, second factor of authentication. You also have to have a USB dongle, and that's for the iOS devices. And nothing else works. You can't say, send me a text message instead, or, oh, just let me in for this one time because I lost my key. You lose the key, you lose your account, and there's a very arduous process to get it back. This is called Google's Advanced Protection. It's a great idea, but they also don't allow any third-party applications to use a Google account. It really locks it down. I like it. I think it's great to have this choice. I turn it on. I'll probably turn it off again because I can't use anything, and I'm deathly afraid of losing my key. But I think it's a great idea, and I wish more would do it, especially my bank, which still sends me text messages. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. Boy, I spent too long explaining two-factor, so I didn't get enough time to explain the... So the real disadvantage, I'll tell you guys at home, not the radio listeners, the real disadvantage, the initial disadvantage is you can't use on your iPhone, for instance, any... You can't use Apple Mail now. You have to use Gmail. You can't use any non-Google products to access Google stuff because it won't authorize third-party apps. That's part of the security, right? But it means on your it's not so bad on an Android phone because you're probably all Google anyway. But on an iPhone, I can't use Apple's Mail program. I can't use Apple's Calendar program. I have to use all Google stuff. Problem two, which I hope they will fix, it doesn't work on Linux. Actually, maybe it does work on Linux. Well, maybe not. We're going to find out because I'm on a Linux box over here. But you can still access your email at home, right? So what you have to do is you have to use Chrome, you have to use Google's browser, and you authenticate with this key at home. And you only have to authenticate once on any given device. You know, it's one of those things where the first time you use it, you have to say, oh, yeah, I'm me. And they go, okay, fine. But that's potentially a problem because if it doesn't work on Linux, which is about half of my machines. So let's find out. Find out right now. So, yeah, I've tried it on two different Linux boxes. So I need to sign in again. You are signed out of your Google account. Yeah, because I changed this thing. Now it wants the password. It knows who I am. That's good. By the way, I had to stop doing my fancy mail routing as well because I couldn't. So I put in my password, and now the second factor. Insert. Now, this is where it failed last time. Let's see what happens. Insert your security key. I have to go all the way over there. All right, I have insert. Yeah, something went wrong as soon as I insert it. Yeah. Yep, can't do it. As soon as you insert it, something goes wrong. You never can get it going. So it's the strongest security for those who need it most. Unless you're using Linux, then you're screwed. So I think I'm going to end up turning it off because I need to use Linux. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. And now, ladies and gentlemen, live from the other studio in beautiful downtown Petaluma, California.
20 feet away.
Live from 20 feet away, Kim Sheffer. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. I can breathe this week.
Yeah, the smoke is cleared in Northern California. The fires are not fully contained, but almost. So... And now the cleanup begins.
And we got some rain, too, which was amazing.
Yeah, that helped, I'm sure. And anybody who's, lived in New Orleans or Houston or Puerto Rico knows the cleanup is going to take a long time. Thousands of homes burned to the ground.
Like 5,000, 6,000?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
If you go up to the wine country in Sonoma and Napa, if you go up there, most of it, it looks completely normal, beautiful.
Yeah.
And then you look to the left and, oh my gosh, what happened there?
I took a smart train ride up and it goes right through Coffee Park.
Oh, does it really?
That's...
Wow.
chilling to see.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. Hey. Thank you for everybody for your support, your thoughts, your prayers. And I know lots of people have donated, and that's wonderful. We really appreciate it. And it's just all these things happening so rapidly. You know, people start to say, I can't give you any more money.
Yeah. Everybody's tapped out.
And we're emotionally tapped out.
And that too.
Yeah. All right. Let's pretend everything's fine and take some phone calls.
Well, it's right with the world, except for Denise's hard drive.
Uh-oh.
In Santa Clarita.
Oh, no.
She needs some help with mounting her hard drive.
Thank you, Kim. Hello, Denise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I have a 1 terabyte Seabay external hard drive and connected it to my Mac and got this dialog box that says that this you inserted was not readable by the computer. And my question is, what, in your opinion, would be the best Mac hard drive recovery software to help read what's on the...
Well, let me ask you about this Seagate. Had you ever used it before?
Yeah, I've had it for like about 3 months.
Oh, and it was working fine.
Yeah.
So this sometimes happens with a brand new drive because Apple's file system is not the same as Windows. And so if you go to the store and you buy a drive, usually you have to format it with Disk Utility. But you were using it, you were putting stuff on it, and all of a sudden, boom, it just stopped being visible, readable.
Right.
There are, just like on the Windows side, there are disk recovery tools. My favorite that would probably be very useful for this particular problem is called SpinWrite, but it doesn't really work on a Mac without some extra effort. Mm-hmm. There are other tools though, and the one that most people use is from Alsoft, ALSOFT.com, and it's called It's called Disk Warrior. It's been around forever and ever and ever, and Yeah, the problem is it works in some situations and not in others. It depends on what went wrong with the drive. And so let me explain the couple of kinds of failures you can have on a drive are hard failures and soft failures. Hardware can die. You know, that drive is a spinning thing with a head on it and platters. It's sealed in a vacuum so that no dust gets on the platter. And if that something goes wrong there, the bearings fail in the spinning platter, it's going very fast, more than 5,000 revolutions a minute. If the bearings fail, or if the circuit board on it fails, or if there was an impact, if it gets dropped, it can get bent. All of those things will not be fixed by any software ever. Those things can only be fixed if, you know, you're willing to pay thousands of dollars by specialists who will take it apart they'll be wearing bunny suits in a dust-free environment. And they'll very carefully take it apart and replace any broken parts because they have exactly many copies of exactly the same hard drive. And they, you know, that's if you have something on there, you know, if you've got your Bitcoin wallet with 1,000 Bitcoins in there, that's the kind of thing you might spend a few $1,000s to fix. So I don't know what happened to your drive. Let's hope it wasn't that, because the other kind of errors, the soft errors, can be fixed with software. And in that category, there are a lot of different kinds of failures. Probably, it just happened one day, right?
Yeah, it just happened a couple of days ago because it was on my Mac, and I went to it, and nothing was showing up. You know, my files weren't showing up on it.
Yeah. So assuming it's not the hard failure, Alsoft's Disk Warrior can fix a lot of the problems. It can fix I can give you some scenarios. Maybe it's just like a library, and there's a card catalog. There's a file catalog on the drive, and if that gets damaged, it can't read the files. It can read the drive, but the files have disappeared. In that case, this would fix that. But then there's lower level things that could happen that this couldn't fix. But it's worth a try anyway. It's called Disk Warrior from Alsoft. I don't know if they offer a free trial. I don't think they do. I think you have to buy it. But if there's something on there you really need, it's probably worth it. It's a little expensive. It's $120. But it's a lot less than $5,000. So if it's worth, whatever's on there is worth $120. And remember, it's not guaranteed to work. That's the program you need. Now, you can't just install it on that drive. Obviously, you don't want to touch that drive. Is it a USB drive or is it internal?
USB drive.
Okay, good. So shut down the machine, disconnect the drive, turn the machine back on, download and install Allsoft's Disk Warrior, and then go through it, and it'll ask you to hook up the drive. Because what you don't want to do is in any way modify that Seagate. You want to keep that Seagate unmodified until you run the software on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's another tool that's a little less expensive. It's $80. It's probably doing much the same thing. It's from a company called ProSoft Engineering, ProSoftEng.com. It's called Data Rescue 3. I don't have experience. Frankly, I haven't had to use either of these in quite some time. So I'm not sure. And then, by the way, very good tip from the chat room. Dr. Mom says, it could just be your cable or your USB port. So it wouldn't be a bad idea to take that USB drive and just plug it into some other machine and make sure, and maybe even use a different cable just to make sure it's not that.
That's what I did. I plugged it into the other machine, other Macs, and it did the same thing, the same dialog box.
Good. Okay. And did you try a different cable? You might, if you have another cable lying around, try another cable. But that was very smart of you, just to make sure it wasn't that machine.
And then I also looked online, and it said to go to this utility and see if you can mount it.
Yeah.
It shows it up, but it doesn't show the second part of it.
Yeah, good. That's a good sign. That means the drive, it's not a physical failure probably of the drive. It's probably that soft failure where the catalog got munged up. So one of these programs will work quite well.
Alrighty, cool.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And good luck.
Bye-bye.
Hard drives die. This is the nature of the business. Google, which uses a lot of hard drives, as you might imagine, did a study where they kind of showed that hard drives, the failure rate, of course, goes up over time. It either fails right away or it won't fail for a few years, but then the rates go up 5 or 10% every year after that. So back it up. This would be a good place for our ad for Carbonite, but I don't have the time. But you understand, back it up. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, coming up in just a bit. I want to tell you a little bit about my good friends at WordPress.com, our sponsor for this segment of the Tech Guy Show. My blog, for years, I think I started using WordPress in 2001, something like that. And when I first started using it, self-hosted. I paid for a server and I set it up, and that was good. I was doing it because I wanted to learn. But then I realized this is a lot of work. I'm spending more time tweaking my blog software than I am blogging. So I moved to WordPress.com, and I am so happy. WordPress runs 28% of all the websites in the world. I mean, it is completely dominant. When you run your WordPress site, it doesn't have to be a blog. In fact, if you're a business, this is a great place to make your home. When you run it at WordPress.com, you're always using the latest version. They update all the plugins. It's the most secure system. And you get this great community because there's a lot of people using WordPress.com, including some of the largest publications in the world. You don't need prior experience. If you have a business and you haven't set up a site, I'm sure by now you're realizing you need a site. That Facebook page, that's not going to do it. You want a Facebook page. You want a Twitter account, but you want it to link back to your site where you control it 100%. People can find out about your business, your services. If you watch this show, every time I talk about something, I send people to the website. You've got to have the website. And I know why you didn't. Because it's like, I don't know how to do this. You don't have to. WordPress.com. Choose from hundreds of beautiful designs. They take care of all the technical stuff. All you do is you put content in there. If you decide, hey, I want it to look different tomorrow, you press a button. Content stays. The design changes. They have a wonderful customer support team. I've actually used them. And I think I know a lot about WordPress. But I had a couple of questions. They are fantastic. WordPress experts who are really eager to help you and very friendly and available, by the way, 24 hours a day, Monday through Friday. They're even available on weekends. Prices start at just $4 a month. It is easy to do. There's no reason not to have a WordPress site for your business, for your blog, for your hobby. 28% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress, and for good reason. Go to WordPress.com/techguy. We'll get you 15% off on your any new plan purchase. 15% off at WordPress.com/techguy. Create your stunning website. Oh, and look. Hi, Tech Guy listeners. Look at these beautiful themes, too. This is really great. WordPress.com/techguy for 15% off your new site. The magic music means but one thing. It's time to boogie on down with Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, editor-in-chief. I'm sorry, I keep giving you that title. Editor at the AVS Forum.
That's fine.
Editor, the boss.
You can call me anything you want. Just don't call me late for dinner.
King of content at avsforum.com. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo.
So you have, you know, it's so funny how in the last few months, the conversation has really moved to 4K TVs, and in particular, HDR, high dynamic range, where the blacks are darker, the whites are whiter. You get a broader range of color.
Sounds like a laundry detergent commercial.
Doesn't it? Brighter brights, whiter whites.
Yep.
But it looks good. I wish there were more HDR content. You have an interesting listener question.
I do. Yeah, Paul Renault asked, given that 4K HDR is really becoming more real and content more available, which is true, I'm intrigued about the difference between 4K streaming from Netflix and so on versus 4K discs, or rather really ultra HD Blu-ray discs.
Mostly, anyone, that's what we're getting these days is the streaming, right? Unless you,
well, there are more and more. In fact, virtually all, certainly most, the vast majority of UHD Blu-rays on the market are HDR.
Now, yeah.
Now,
but how many is that? Hundreds?
Well, yeah, we're in the couple hundred range, probably like that.
But most new movies, I'm sure, will be 4K HDR.
Oh, they will coming out disc. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of streaming content, and exclusively on streaming. So Netflix has got a number of programs, original programs.
Yeah, House of Cards was shot in 4K, not HDR though. But Marco Polo
was. Yeah.
Too bad it's such a terrible show. But other than that,
actually, I didn't mind that.
I watched it for the HDR.
Show.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Well. It was interesting. Just this week, I went down to Hollywood Boulevard, you know, the Hollywood Walk of Fame. LG had erected a freestanding building on Hollywood Boulevard showing their OLED TV with Netflix HDR content, including this movie from Korea called Okja, which is really an interesting movie. I do recommend it. Coming up, their new season of Stranger Things.
Oh, is that going to be an HDR?
Yes, indeed.
Say no more. That's all I needed to hear.
That's right.
So how's that going to look, though, compared to a disc?
Well, that's the question that Paul is asking. And the answer is, it doesn't look as good.
Oh.
I mean, it still looks good.
Yeah.
But you have to keep in mind that a Blu-ray, an Ultra HD Blu-ray, the bit rate, the data rate, the rate at which data comes off the disc is like 100 megabits per second.
Oh, so you can't do that if you...
With streaming, yeah. You're going to top out at a quarter of that, like 25 or so. What that means is that the streaming service, Netflix or Amazon or Apple or whoever, they have to compress, they have to data compress the file, and they have to really compress it a lot for streaming because not all of us have 100 megabits down in coming into our home. Most people don't.
So
I forget
Netflix,
what the average is.
Netflix suggests 25 megabits down per second for ultra HD quality. They don't mention HDR, but I presume if you could get UHD, HDR.
You can get HDR. HDR adds maybe 10%, 15%.
Oh, okay.
It's not that much.
So people say, my ISP says 100 megabits, but the problem is they say up to 100 megabits, and
exactly.
Who else is using it, and et cetera,
exactly. Exactly. So if somebody else in your home is using it, part of your bandwidth for something, you're not going to get 100 megabits, depending on the system. Anyway, so they have to compress the you-know-what out of it, and that affects the quality. You see more noise.
Yeah. One quarter the size.
Yeah, it has to be like one quarter the size of what's coming off the disk. So that's why I and most members of AVS Forum, being geeks like we are, prefer the disk because of the quality that you're getting, especially on a larger screen. Here's the other thing is if you have a really large screen, any flaws in the image will be much more visible. So if you've got a projection system, and we were talking about this a little off air, you know, is it better to watch HDR on a projector or a flat panel TV? In fact, we have a poll up on AVS Forum asking that very question. And projectors have their limitations, no question. They have to be in a dark room. They don't get nearly as bright as TVs, so the high dynamic range isn't as dramatic typically. But you can get a much larger picture, and it's a much more cinematic experience if you're in a dark room. You have to be in a really blacked out room. But if you are, then the HDR, I think, looks great. And you can get a much bigger picture for, you know, not nearly as much as you would a comparably sized flat panel. I mean, if you're talking about an 80 or 90 or 100 inch picture, you're going to be spending six figures on a flat panel, nowhere near that on a projector.
So to recap, if you're getting an HDR TV, you should probably get an updated Blu-ray player that does HDR.
Correct. And they're not that much. They're $100, couple hundred bucks. You know, they've come down.
You can rent UHD movies, right?
Well, you know, that's a good question.
just go down to the Blockbuster. Oh, never mind.
Oh, wait, no, there's no Blockbuster.
Oh, never mind.
I mean, I'm on Netflix streaming, but I don't. Do they even still have disc rentals?
Yeah,
we have a
VHS rental place down the road, but
do you really? Yeah, oh, yeah. Wow.
Most of what they do is sell VHS tapes three for a dollar, pretty much. That's their business model. Now,
do you still have a VHS?
No, we don't have VCR? A DVD. We don't have a DVD. No, I don't. And we don't have a DVD. No, of course, who does? But we don't. And I don't think we have a DVD rental place in town anymore. I think they're all gone.
Yeah.
So Netflix so offers. Really you could do it from Netflix. Well, you can do it. Yeah, but you're buying. See, I don't like to buy movies because, okay, Mad Max looks great, UHD, 4K.
Right.
Really does,
right.
The new one.
Fury Road.
Fury Road. But how many times are you going to watch that, really?
Right. Or any movie, really. Okay, so I'm a Trekker, right? So I'll buy the Star Trek movies and I'll watch those time and again. But for the most part, yeah, you're right. On the other hand, there is an argument that humans like to own physical things.
Yeah, that argument is rapidly... it was always
diminishing.
The argument. Yeah, I think it's rapidly diminishing. It's so convenient just to stream a movie when you're in the mood to watch it. Who wants the clutter, you know, of all these discs you're never going to watch again?
That's right.
They used to say that about music. I think Steve Jobs said about music, people want to own music. Well, that's been proven wrong. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs said it because they didn't have a streaming service yet. So
this is the age-old question of convenience versus quality.
Well, and I think the darn millennials decided on convenience.
We'll pick convenience every time.
Yeah,
huh?
And frankly, I was just teasing. So do I. And you know, I have to say UHD streaming, while not as good as a disc, it looks pretty good. It's definitely better.
It's pretty darn good.
Yeah, it's better. Yeah.
Especially with high dynamic range.
You know what you should do? You should get you can get a UHD DVD player for cheap now, right? They're under a couple hundred bucks for most cases.
Yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
even $100. Yeah. And then get BBC Planet Earth, the new version, Planet Earth 2.
Planet Earth 2.
UHD.
Yep. High dynamic range.
And just put that on an endless loop and you're good. That's it. People come in the door, they say, oh, you have a UHD TV. Yeah, let me show you. Okay, thanks.
That's it. That's all you need.
That's all you need. Scott Wilkinson, Editor-in-Chief, AVS Forum. Thank you so much for joining us. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll tell you a little bit about Apple's new file system. It might be the cause of our last caller's woes when we get back. Leo Laporte. Whoa. All right, Mr. Scott. Your time has come.
Thank you. So Joe says a lot of big Netflix releases are released on Blu-ray as well. I'm not sure they're released in 4K or HDR for that matter. That's a good question. Is Okja on UHD Blu-ray? I haven't watched that movie yet, and I really want to. It's from Korea. It looks like a very sweet story, and I think I will be checking that out. But let's see. Keith512 says provides a link for the Harry Potter 8 film collection 4K Blu-ray, probably HDR. In fact, let me click on that link and see if I can see if normally. Yep, HDR. There it is. 8 movies, all in HDR, the Harry Potter collection. I guess it makes more sense to have a disc player if you've got kids in the house, because they watch stuff over and 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 over. But I think the quality of HDR might be lost on them. They don't care. What do they care? It's their favorite movie. It's what they want. Jack is asking, how do you think the PS4 Pro and Xbox One X compare to standalone Blu-ray player? That's a pretty good question. I don't know, because I haven't tried those games, but I would guess that they're certainly comparable to standalone Blu-ray player. Plus, you get a game console if you're into that sort of thing. I'm not, so I wouldn't buy one. But if you are, then you're sort of getting a twofer. Now, they're more expensive. I think they're like in the $400 range, right? So you're spending more, but you're getting more too. M. LaWish, old TV, old receiver, sound imbalance, why? Well, sorry, you're going to have to give me more information than that.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. So Apple, with its newest version of macOS, which is now being pushed to everybody, and if you go to the App Store on your Macintosh, you'll see it. It's called High Sierra. It's very pretty mountains and stuff. Does something very interesting that is really long overdue, but it could potentially have some side effects. Apple's file system was called HFS Plus. HFS itself is almost 30 years old now. You know, they used to use FAT, remember, file allocation table, and then it was FAT 16, then FAT 32. Now Windows machines generally use NTFS, the new technology file system. So file systems are the way your data is stored on a hard drive. And they do need to be updated from time to time as technologies come along. One of the real problems for Apple was they were selling mostly machines with solid-state disks. And the HFS Plus file system didn't even know anything about solid-state disks. It didn't understand them. Didn't do anything, you know, different. And so they weren't getting optimal performance. So Apple worked a long time, very hard, on something they called APFS, which stands for something file system, AP, Apple something file system. And it's finally available in High Sierra. When you upgraded to iOS 10, I think it was, your iPhone was automatically updated. Your iPhone's using APFS now. Your iPad's using APFS now. But they were a little slower going to the Macintosh for a couple of reasons. One, it doesn't work with Apple's Fusion disks. And many of us in our iMacs have Fusion disks. It doesn't work with some external drives. There are limitations to what it'll work with. And they may be artificial. Apple probably is just being cautious, as they should, because if you make a mistake with a file system, that's not good. People lose data. So I should have asked the last caller if she had upgraded to High Sierra and instituted the upgrade process, because that normally is fine. It goes fine. I've done it, and a couple of machines works fine, and I haven't had any problems. But changing the file system on the fly while you're running is a big deal, and that could cause data loss and errors. So just something to be aware of. I think if you have a Macintosh, you should go to the new version if you can, High Sierra, if your Macintosh is recent enough. And I would turn on APFS, but make sure you back up your data first, of course. Dr. Mom! Hello, Dr. Mom.
Hey, Leo.
From Long Island. Lillian is an expert in Echoes and Sonos, because you got both.
Right. You can say the A word because I turned off the mic on the one in this room, so we won't trip it.
So I have to say, I was getting it wrong. For some reason, somewhere I read that you have to connect a dot to a Sonos speaker, but you don't.
No, you don't. What you do is you use the skill, and you have to make sure that the app, whatever device you got your app on, is on the same Wi-Fi network as the Sonos system. Turn on the skill and let it discover it.
So you go to your Echo app on your phone, and you go to settings, and you go to skills, and you add a skill called Sonos.
Correct.
And then the next thing that happens is you go to the devices section, and all of a sudden, all your Sonos devices are visible along with those other devices like your Ring doorbell or your Logitech Harmony Hub that you've seen all along. Now they're there as well.
Well, it's not just that. If you go and look in your the settings section on the Alexa app, and where it lists all your Alexas, you're going to see all your Sonos speakers there too.
That's what I said. Yeah, that's what that means. You can command them now.
What you can command them. You can also sit there and use the Alexa. Where it says,
say Echo. Dr. Mom, do me a favor. I know it's not triggering yours, but you're triggering millions of other people. So just say Echo.
Okay.
Okay.
How about the
Echo's fine. A-word. Say A word, although I think people might think of a different A word when you say that.
Okay. Well, okay. What you can do is you can go pick that device, go to all the optional streaming services on the Echo app and pick any one of those. Now, there's some things, however, I found it won't do. You can't right now make it stream the music that you have stored locally that's linked up to your Sonos system.
I know.
The other thing it won't do, interestingly, even though you can play Spotify on the Sonos and you can play it on the Echo, you can't start a Spotify stream through the Echo app. It won't go.
Yeah, my favorite thing, of course, to do with the Echo is to listen to my Audible books. That won't work either.
Well, here's where it gets interesting. I like listening to it also. So I have a Play 5 in the family kitchen room area, and that's the one that has the auxiliary in jack in the back. And I just hooked
that one
up to
that
it.
One you connect up. Yeah, yeah.
So I can listen to Audible. Guess what?
What?
When you wake up the Echo, in other words, you say the Hi Echo, whatever word you're going to use.
Yeah.
It immediately pots down every single Sonos speaker in your system.
What?
Yeah, give it a try. I mean, there's a logic behind it. It says, well, we need to be listening for this, so we better turn off all the other noise.
Oh, well, that's sensible. It also doesn't want to play the boop at a very high volume throughout your entire home. That makes sense as well.
On the other hand, it was making me nuts for a while.
Why is everything quiet? Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Why am I not hearing anything?
Yeah.
The other things it won't do, and this is a reason right now I'm not going to get a Sonos One. It's partial. The Sonos One, the Echo capabilities are partially disabled. Yeah. It does not do notifications.
Right.
It doesn't do messages, and it doesn't do the calls.
It's not really an Echo. It's a Sonos with Echo integration.
It's a Sonos that's got the Echo integration
with limited
basic skills, and to be able to play the music. And I got to tell you something. I use a lot of those other skills. Right now, we've turned the house intercom through the dock.
Isn't that awesome?
That we use.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
But if I can't, if I can't do that, I can get a decent speaker for a dot for less than buying the Sonos.
Sonoses are expensive. Yeah, so they announced a new speaker that has Echo built into it, and it does sound better than an Echo, but it's not more expensive than an Echo, is it? It's about the same, maybe a little more expensive. It's called the Sonos One. I have one on the way. They shipped it, so I should have it by next week, and we could talk a little bit about it, but you don't really need it because if you have Sonos and you have Echo, all you have to do is add that skill.
Yeah, let me make a suggestion for people who are listening. Look up on Amazon. There is a speaker called a Vaux, a V-A-U-X.
Yeah.
And it's designed to drop an Echo Dot into it.
Oh, clever.
It'll power the Echo.
It's got a little divot on the top that's just the right size for a dot.
Right, and what they don't show you in that first picture, there's two cables. You pull down a flap on the back.
Yeah.
There's your auxiliary out cable, and there's your charge cable.
Nice.
And it has an 8-hour battery.
It's $50.
How
does it sound?
The sound's pretty decent. I mean, if you're going to put it in the bathroom, if you want to take it outside and listen to music, the sound is fine. Again, yeah. It's like the original Echo. If you're an audiophile, you're not going to say, this is wonderful.
And that's why a lot of people are waiting to see what Apple does with its HomePod, which comes out in December. And Google has now announced the Google Home Max that will be a bigger speaker, presumably better. So I think I wouldn't buy Sonos today. I would wait and see. But if you have some Sonoses and you have some Echoes, it's nice. Thank you, Dr. Mom. We're going to take a break for news. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Thank you, Lil.
Oh, mine was supposed to be here today, and now they're saying Monday.
Yeah, mine was too.
I have a feeling I'm going to return it. The second I saw, I can't do the intercom. I can't do the messaging.
It's not an Echo. It's really a Sonos with some Echo skills.
You know, it's similar to what they did on Ecobee, where there's limited Echo skills.
I didn't need it because I'm perfectly happy with how everything's working. But I have to review it. So I thought I'd try.
I mean, the sound is, I'm sure, is better, than the other stuff. But to me, to spend that kind of money, I'd rather keep the Dot and get one of those Vox speakers.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Those look really cool.
It's nice. The battery says 6 to 8 hours. If I complain for the chat room, there's no signal that the battery's about to die.
Oh.
In other words, there's no light or something comes up and says, go recharge this thing.
How many Sonoses do you have?
okay.
Don't count them. It's all right. I have a lot, too.
Me too.
We have them all over the studio as well.
I've got six of them. I've got one in every bedroom.
That's thousands of dollars. Yeah, me too. I have two in the bedroom, so I have left and right. I have two in the kitchen for left and right. I have the surround sound set up in Lisa's gym, so that's the sound bar, the sub, and then two surrounds, two play ones. I have... I used to have one in the laundry room. I finally decided that was overkill.
Yeah. Now I have a play bass in the master bedroom. I have a one in the bathroom. I have a three in my husband's bedroom. A five, not in the bedroom. And sorry, oops.
This is starting to get weird, right, Scott? This is starting to get weird. Hey, Dr. Mom, I'm gonna let you go because we're using Scott's time up. Okay.
Okay, go, Scott. Talk to you. I'll talk to you when the one comes in, Leo.
Yeah, please. We'll talk about it together.
Hey, Dr. Okay, Mom. Right, nice to hear you.
Thanks, Dr. Mom.
Nice to hear you, Scott. Okay, bye.
Bye. Oh, man.
I
got my Sonos in the bathroom.
Oh, I have a Sonos in the... Well, yeah, you know what I did? Lisa and I have this thing now where every once in a while I'll say a song title.
Yeah.
Like I said this morning, I said, I had to push it. And and then I go, Echo, listen to Salt and Peppa. On the bedroom Sonos, and it only played a 30-second clip, but it was funny. I like
that's
to do that.
Very funny.
It's my sound. It's the soundtrack for my life. All right, all yours, Scott.
Thank you. Beatmaster is bringing up something interesting. Leo, you might want to hang out.
I know about this one. We answered it on the show.
Oh, the dual HDMI output?
Yeah, a guy called in later on the show and explained that it was for older AV receivers that couldn't handle it.
Correct.
And so I've got a number of emails as well.
Yeah. Okay, good. So you understand.
The guy wanted to know, is there an audio advantage? I said, I don't think so.
No, there's no audio advantage. There's just the ability to play the audio out of your older system and then send the newer video stream, 4K HDR, directly to the TV.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah, somebody called later in the show and said, let me explain what I do with
it. Okay, very good. Wildfire's asking, what do I make of the DataSat takeover? That's a kind of a interesting thing. An amplifier company, ATI, bought the company DataSat, which has been involved for many, many years in commercial cinema audio. And they now also make a preamp processor for home theater. Very expensive, very high end. What do I make of it? I don't know yet. We'll see what happens. We'll probably see some result of it at CES. They were probably at Cedia as well. I was covering video more than audio, so I didn't really pay attention to that, but Mark Henninger might have. And ATI will certainly be at CES, so we'll see what happens there. Let's see. Magpie is asking where to buy a new TCL 55P607 in the LA area. Whew, boy, I don't know. Amazon says 4 to 6 weeks. Wow. In the LA area, well, there aren't very many retailers left, are there? Does Best Buy sell TCL? I'm not 100% sure. That would be one place to look. I bet you the other retailer that I know pretty well is called Video and Audio Center. But they tend to sell kind of higher-end stuff, midline and higher, not necessarily the really inexpensive stuff like the TCL. Costco, maybe? I'd have to go do some research on that. And if it were at Costco, it probably has a slightly different model number. This is very confusing that manufacturers very often will sell the same TV out of Costco or Sam's Club or Best Buy, and it'll have a different model number. It's what's called captive branding. It's the same TV, but you wouldn't know it because it's got a different model number. And this is very confusing. I don't like the way they do that. Big Pie is asking why, when using digital broadcast antenna, changing channels is so slow. It shouldn't be. That's more a function of the tuner, I think, than anything else. It's all about the tuner. I bet you if you were to try a different tuner, which would probably be in a different TV, since they don't sell really. I guess they do sell standalone tuners these days, but I think the one thing to do would be to try and change that or to try to compare different ones. Emily the Strange, I'm doing fine, thank you. She is bemoaning, as I am, that Home Theater Geeks is no longer on, but I'm talking with AVS Forum about resurrecting it. So I think if you are patient, we might very well see it again. Let's see. Oh, yes, Marsworm. There is a 3D Rents Blu-rays and UHD Blu-rays called store-3d-blu-ray-rental.com. How interesting. That may be the only one left. Let's see. Yep, look at that. By golly. It is 4K rentals, like for $6 for the for 4K and HDR. There you go. Wow, 3D Blu-ray rental. It's funny that they hung their name hat on 3D, even though that's not so important anymore. But now UHD Blu-ray is. So, and you can rent them from there. Very good. I'm glad to know that. Oh, Sybil, excellent. Walmart sells TCL. That's right. I should have remembered Walmart. That would probably be the first place I'd look, actually. Walmart would undoubtedly sell TCL 55P607. CO Broad, am I correct in assuming Dolby Vision requires a physical chip? And if a Blu-ray or gaming system like Xbox One does not have that chip, it cannot be upgraded to Dolby Vision. The answer is yes and no. It does require a certain level of processing. And if it has a certain level of processing, it can be software updated to Dolby Vision. But if it doesn't have that level of processing, that level of power, processing power, then it can't. So it's kind of confusing, I know, but the answer is kind of yes and no. The Sony TVs, for example, have the X1 Extreme processor, and that can be set up to do Dolby Vision.
Thank you, Scott. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and, let's see, digital stuff, watches, phones. Augmented reality, 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, 8888-ASK-LEO, if you're outside that area, Skype will work. Website where we put links to everything I mention, and there are a lot of links from the show already. James DeRuvo's writing those down, and he puts them up at techguylabs.com. Tech guy, that's me, labs, imagine me in a lab coat with a Bunsen burner and beakers and hair sticking out. That's it. TechGuyLabs.com. And we not only put all the links and stuff up there, you know, show notes, I guess they call it, but we also put the audio and the video of the show after the fact. Yeah, we do video. We also, so you can see the behind the scenes. We also put your comments. So if you want to go there, the point being that I know, because I do it, people listen to the radio and they yell at the radio, right? You're driving around, you know, you're doing your chores, and I say something. You go, Leo, that's dopey. Why don't you try this? Well, instead of yelling at your radio, which is completely ineffective, because as try as I might, I can't hear that. You could yell on the website. Just do all caps. We divide the website up into shows. This is episode 1,432. And then each show divided up into hours, and each hour is divided up into segments or calls. So you can go right to that call and just, you know, comment right there. And it's easy to comment. We don't ask any money for the website. We don't ask you to subscribe or anything like that. We don't ask for your email. But we do, but with one exception, when you leave a comment, we ask you to log in with your Twitter or your Facebook or your Google, just so that, you know, basically we don't get spam. We still get spam. Spammers are clever. But to minimize the spam, to give them a little speed bump, a tiny little speed bump. TechGuyLabs.com. Dennis has been hanging on very patiently from Korea. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
Well, thank you for being so patient. I appreciate your calling. Are you stationed in Korea, or you live there? Or
I'm a government contractor, U.S. government contractor.
All right. How? Where in Korea? Are you in Seoul?
I'm north of Seoul.
Oh, dear. I hope not too far north of Seoul.
You can't go much far north of Seoul.
Wow. All right. Stay safe up there, okay? Wow. Okay.
Well, last time I called you before from Afghanistan a few years ago, so I get around a little
bit.
Well,
you really get to the hot spots of the world.
Hey, we got my next gig's in Ukraine.
Oh, wow.
Can't wait. Yeah.
I won't probe, because obviously what you do is probably classified. But thank you for your service. I appreciate it.
Okay. I have a question and I have a couple of technology observations from over here.
Great. I'd love to hear about that. Yeah.
My first question is, I came here with my iPhone 7 Plus. But because I'm in Samsung territory here, I got a Galaxy S8 Plus.
Yeah, no kidding, you're in Samsung territory. Samsung's about a third of the GNP of Korea, South Korea.
Yeah, so the Samsung Galaxy S8 Plus has a button on the left side under the down volume button, which turns on their
Bixby
verbal assistant Bixby.
Bixby button.
That's driving me crazy. The button. And I can't turn the button off.
So Samsung, I think Samsung knows this, because the most recent update, and I presume you're getting updates, and if you're using an Android phone, you got to get updates. The most recent update had a little switch. Next time you press the button, you'll note, and if not, you can go to the settings to find it, a little switch that disables the button. It doesn't disable Bixby.
I don't care.
What happens is now the Bixby voice assistant still comes up. You don't get the Bixby page.
No, the Bixby voice assistant. But because the button that turns the phone, the screen off, is on the right side when you squeeze.
I know.
The phone to turn that.
I know. And first of all, Bixby's dopey. Although Samsung's all in on Bixby, they announced they're going to put it in refrigerators. I'm not kidding. Washing machines. Bixby's everywhere. But I think Bixby's a little bit dopey, especially since you already have Google Assistant built into it. Now you have two voice assistants, but Samsung's always done that because they're Samsung. When the Note 8 first came out, or the S8 first came out, you could disable it. There was a way to disable it using accessibility settings. They immediately patched that so you couldn't disable it. So what would be nice is if we could assign it to something else. But it sounds like for you just don't want it to do anything.
I know it's in a bad spot for me.
Yeah. So to switch it off, you won't get that page anymore. If you press and hold the button, it'll launch a little window at the bottom of the screen that says, what do you want? You know, so you can use it as a voice assistant. But you have to hold it. A tap. Well,
thank you for
it.
For the advice.
So give me some of your observations. I'd love to hear them.
First observations is, some of my work is with the U.S. military. And they use a lot of laptops. A few of them are hardened laptops, but for the most part, they're just off-the-shelf Dells and HPs and that sort of thing.
Right. Wow.
More and more,
that's scary.
I have been seeing Microsoft Surface Pro 4s.
Yeah, they're very nice. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're using them in the field. I mean, as tactical laptops. And they, except for like a
practice. They're not exactly hardened.
Well, neither are Dells or HPs.
No, you're saying they use them in the field. I could see them in an office, but you say they're taking them into the field?
They drag this stuff everywhere.
Wow.
And it's interesting that they're using those. And they seem to like them.
Well, they probably like the tablet aspect of it. You know, this is the one that has kind of a floppy keyboard that you can detach easily. Right. And so it's a tablet plus you can type on it. They're fairly light and compact. And actually, Microsoft, this is a big product for Microsoft. So they just announced a new one. And so they really put a lot of good technology into it. That's interesting to hear.
Yeah. Okay, second.
I know the NFL likes them. You should do what the NFL does and encase them in hard blue rubber.
Yeah, then you'd have a laptop, basically.
Yeah, right. What's the point? Yeah.
Okay, second observation is that Korea has a very good public transportation system, above ground rail system, sort of like Europe. Or
I know. I wish we had that here because it's so great to be able to take trains everywhere.
Well, on the train, I'm usually the only non-Korean on the train, and they all have most of them have a phone up in their hand looking at it on the train. I would say 90% of the people. And the observation is that over half of the, and I've been doing a personal poll, over the half of the phones I have seen are iPhones.
What? In Samsung country?
In Samsung Central.
Wow.
And I asked somebody, and they said that they either say it's prestige or they say it's just better. That's all they say.
Interesting. Well, I have to agree. I probably like the iPhone, and obviously you must, a little better than the Samsung devices.
Yeah, I'm lukewarm on the Samsung.
Yeah. The iPhone, though, and well, this will change with the iPhone 10. It doesn't have really the latest technology. I'll give the most obvious example is there's nothing like the Samsung screens on the S8 and the Note 8. They're incredible, and I think much better than the iPhone screens.
Well, I would say my vision is not the best. I would say that from my point of view, they're about par, but I'm not doing
well. And I think that's that is the case for most people. They are because I can read it, I can see it, it's fine, right? But I happen to think OLED screens have lapped LCD screens considerably in terms of not only brightness but also color accuracy. People don't think that, but it's true. The True Tone in the new iPhone 8 is really pretty impressive. That's where it kind of adjusts for the ambient light. So Apple's doing as much as they can with LCD, but notice their next phone is going to be an OLED screen from Samsung. Hey, it's really great to talk to you. Stay safe out there, will you?
I will. Thank you for the time.
Stay away from the line, Dennis, and we'll try to keep...
I've got one more observation if you got a minute, but that's okay.
Hang on, and I'll talk to you off the air. Leo Laporte. Because we got a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I'll tell you if he says anything really good, okay? More of your calls coming up right after this. Sorry about that. I had to break, Dennis.
Oh, no, sorry.
I'd love to hear more. I mean, this will be on the podcast, so.
Well, anyway, so my main computer here at home is a Alienware 17-inch laptop.
Nice.
R2.
Very nice laptop.
Well, I've got it hooked to my Windows account, which works fine. I mean, I like the Windows, you know, the Microsoft interface. So, but I've got this old Surface 2 RT, like Mary Jo had, right?
Oh, man, I had one of those, too. Those things, wow.
And you can't connect it directly to your Microsoft account, but you can log into OneDrive and stuff separately, right?
Right.
It's been okay. Yeah. I got this update recently. It lets you bring up, like, a Windows 7-ish desktop.
How interesting. Right? Really?
Yeah. Well, I think. Anyway, so I bring this up, this desktop, the other day, and the screen background from my Alienware, you know, the screen with the Alienware.
Yes.
On the Surface.
Isn't that awesome? That's one of the things I love about Windows. If you use your Windows account, it takes everything, including your wallpaper, and puts it everywhere.
I know that. That's truly cool.
That's nice. No, that's one of the nicest things about it. I like that it's tied to the Microsoft account. I really do. So my wallpaper is same thing on my Surface laptop, and then on my Lenovo, my ThinkPad Yoga. Do you see any ThinkPads out there on the line?
Well, no, I don't know. Just mostly Dells and HP.
Dells and HP. That's interesting.
And a bunch of, you know, you see the Panasonic Tough Books and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course. The mil-spec stuff. Yeah.
I think they stopped making those because you don't see many of those anymore.
Yeah. Law enforcement loved those too. You'd see those in squad cars all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm trying to negotiate buying a used Surface 4 here soon. I think I'd like to try
them. Should be able to get them because, of course, they've got the new Surface, the numberless Surface, and a lot of people probably are trading up. So you should be able to get one pretty easily.
I'd like to have that, the Surface Book, the one that's got the funky hinge.
I have one. I loved it. I had the first generation, and I think they've really improved it for the next generation.
I would like to have one of those, I think. I think that's a cool laptop. Well, even though I am an Apple guy. So.
Dennis, I hope you get one.
I do too.
Do you listen to the podcast? You must listen to the podcast.
I listen to Windows Weekly.
Nice.
Security Now. Sometimes MacBreak Weekly, and this week in tech. So
wow,
I'm listening to you since you episode one after the Tech TV fell apart.
Yeah.
So
Dennis, I deeply appreciate it. Thank you.
I stumbled on you. Well, I appreciate your show. So have a good good
you
luck.
You too. Good luck for me. I'm just sitting here in Petaluma. Good luck to you. Good luck to you.
Can't wait to get to the Ukraine. That should begin.
When will you be transferring there?
Maybe in a few weeks.
I think you'll like it. It's very European. Ukraine is beautiful. I hope you're in Kyiv.
I'm a cyber analyst. I don't know what they need cyber analysts.
Oh, they need them because Russia uses the Ukraine, as you probably know, as their test bed.
I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, what do they need that for? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's all happening in Ukraine. You'll be in hack heaven there. That'll be fun.
Well, I'm trying to get back in the USSR to play as a song when people are waiting for me.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask. Leo, thank you to Michael Cozio, our musical director. Laying down the tunes, spinning the discs. You know, he does it all with vinyl. I don't know if people know that. He's got three turntables in there, and he's just kidding. Kidding! 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. It's so funny. This stuff happens in tech so fast. Mike Mann in our chat room said, have you mentioned the Wi-Fi hack yet? Crack? Oh, that was Monday. What? That was all ages ago. No, I haven't mentioned it on the radio show, and I probably should. I'm sure you've seen it, K-R-A-C-K, and you've probably seen people running around with hair on fire saying, oh, my God, oh, my God. So if you listen to this show at all, you probably heard me say the only Wi-Fi security you need is to turn on WPA encryption. You've heard me say that, right? You password protect your Wi-Fi. That way your neighbors can't get on it and they can't snoop on the traffic. And that's as opposed to the WEP that some older routers still have, which was cracked almost right away. It was poorly designed. With WEP encryption, somebody sitting on your curb can easily get in and see what you're doing. Well, turns out, same thing with WPA2, even the strongest WPA2 AES encryption. There's a flaw in the way it's implemented. Fortunately, it's a easily fixable flaw. But a security researcher discovered a few months ago and announced it publicly on Monday. Now people know about it. Of course, bad guys will attempt to use it. It's not an easy thing to do. They have to be within range of your Wi-Fi, so they have to be nearby. It's probably more of a threat in a open Wi-Fi access point like at an airport or hotel or coffee shop because they could be, you know, sitting next door. Of course, if you live in Hackertown, USA, your neighbors can see your Wi-Fi. That may be something to be worried about. It is not – the good news is it's easily fixable. Fixes are coming out. It does not need to be fixed on your router. I think this is one little thing that many, including myself, initially misunderstood. The hack is only of things attaching to your router, your phone, your laptop, your Amazon Echo, the IoT devices, your ovens, your refrigerators, those things. And then the traffic from that device to your router can be monitored. So it does mean that your laptop needs to be updated. And in fact, it's interesting because Apple on iOS and Microsoft on Windows didn't implement WPA2 correctly, it turns out. They're not vulnerable. they made, usually it's the other way around, right? They made a mistake that made them safe. However, patches are coming out rapidly for iOS. They're coming out rapidly for Windows, Macintosh, even Linux. You should look for, as always, security updates and apply them as quickly as you can. As quickly as you can, because this is, you know, potentially disastrous. Except most of your traffic now. It's one of the reasons I used to harp all the time about use a VPN when you go to the coffee shop. And you may still want to do that. Certainly if you do that, this will that will help with crack. But most of the traffic now that when you get online is encrypted anyway. Your traffic to Google, even your Google searches. You notice that HTTPS and the sometimes green bar, the lock, depending on the browser you use, that indicates you're secure. Facebook, you're secure. Most of the things, your email, you're secure. Most of the things you do now are encrypted over and above the encryption from your router. And that will protect you in many cases. So it's not as bad as it looks. But you definitely want to get patches. And in particular, you want to get patches for things that connect to your Wi-Fi. Your doorbells, your security cameras. And this is, once again, why we always say, be very careful when you buy Internet of Things devices, Internet-connected appliances, that you're getting it from somebody reputable, somebody who stands behind it, and most importantly, somebody who will update it. So if you're getting Nest products, for instance, nothing to worry about. That's owned by Google. They're keeping those secure. If you buy Ring devices, same thing. The big names, you're good. Big American companies. What you want to avoid is the inexpensive security camera you buy on Amazon made in China. Those guys are never going to update. So I guess the message is it's nothing to panic about. It's kind of surprising. The guy who discovered the hack, Maddie, even said that WPA2 had been proven mathematically correct. Like, no, this and it really isn't that WPA2 isn't mathematically correct. It's that the way it's implemented has a potential flaw. And really, a lot of credit to Maddie Van Hulf, who discovered this. We had him on one of our news shows this week. Smart kid. You can find out more if you really want to get technical details at crackattacks.com, K-R-A-C-K, attacks.com. But and I'll put a link in the show notes. But really, the main point is don't freak out. Don't panic. You're probably safe in most cases. If you're worried, if you're on the North Korea-South Korea border, if you're in the Ukraine, you might want to turn on VPNs, but probably most of us will be okay. But do, as always, it's always the case. Get all the patches, get all the security fixes for everything. Always stay on top of that. That's what protects you. Scott from Redondo Beach, California. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Scott. Welcome.
So I'm building a house, and I need to install Wi-Fi throughout the house. And
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what the best system to do it would be in terms of both type of system and then brands of routers.
Okay. I mean, really, you don't have to do it as you build it. In fact, you probably would be – I would caution against building anything in like the router because you're going to want to update it every few years. Routers really should be updated pretty regularly. But you certainly will want – how big is the house?
3,800 square feet.
Big. Okay. That means you'll probably want one of these new mesh router systems. And they're very good because they're designed for large houses like yours. Each unit in the mesh router system handles about 1,500 square feet. So you're going to want to get three. That's typically how they come. Google makes them. Linksys makes them. The ones I use at home, I use two. One is Eero. They're a sponsor of some of our podcasts, but I do like the Eero. And that was one of the first, E-E-R-O. And then I also use, and there's a little different, something called Plume, P-L-U-M-E. So the Eero is exactly, you know, like most of these others. You get one base station that you'll connect to your cable modem or DSL modem, and then you get beacons, remote units you just plug into the wall. You don't, truthfully, you don't need to build these in at all. In fact, if you're building, usually my advice is, yeah, you're going to use Wi-Fi, but it wouldn't be a bad idea to put conduit in the wall. So if you later wanted to pull, say, fiber optic, you know, in the year 2525, if this building's still alive, you'll want to pull fiber optic or something, right? But for now, Wi-Fi is fine, and I like the Eero. The Plume, I'll talk a little bit about. It's different. But those are two good companies. Google's is okay. I think – oh, and there's one more that I like a lot that's a two-unit system from Linksys called the Ubiquiti. Is that right? Yeah, I like that one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, let me am I saying that? I feel like I said that wrong. Yeah, it is. No, I'm saying Ubiquiti is a different company. It's the Linksys. What is that called? Oh, man.
Yeah, isn't Ubiquiti a different brand?
Yeah, it's not Ubiquiti, and I'm going to have to fix that when I come back. It's the Linksys. What do they call it? No, it's not Linksys. It's Netgear. Oh, it's Netgear Orbi. That's what I was trying to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Netgear Orbi. That one is widely agreed to have the highest speed. And I think they work quite well. They're more like a traditional router, but I think they're very good. So if speed's the ultimate goal, that might be a better choice. The Eeros are very sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
The Eeros have built-in filtering, for instance. You can tell your Amazon Echo, pause the internet for our kid, and it'll do that. I use that a lot. You can set up schedule. It's very sophisticated. The Orbi's more like a traditional Netgear router with this kind of mesh thing. But you don't need, but don't, please don't build it in, because 2 years you're going to get something different.
Yeah, I figured something like that. Yeah. Although, I guess the issue is, do you want wired backhaul and all of that other stuff?
Well, and that, you certainly, I would make a media or a network closet that's mm-hmm. that's close to the cable, you know, that you, or you can route the cable through to, because really eventually, you know, what you're going to end up having servers and switches and all sorts of stuff. You want to put that out of sight. So a small cupboard that can have the cable. Is it cable that you're going to have?
I think I'm going to end up with DirecTV.
Okay. So you're going to have, if you're lucky, you'll have fiber coming in, but otherwise it'll be a twisted pair. But just put that cupboard somewhere near where it's coming into the house, so you don't have to have a long run, and somewhere accessible. I know people sometimes put it in the garage. That's often a good place to put it. And that's where your media servers and stuff are going to go. But if I were building a house and I built that, I would build conduit from that into every room, so that you could put Ethernet now, but later pull fiber or something else, depending on, you know, what the next technology is.
And right now, what would you use, Cat 6? Or?
Yeah, well, if you can afford it, it's expensive. 5E is probably enough, but yeah, 6 would be better if you can afford it.
Okay.
But if you put conduit in, then in 10 years, because 10 years is a lifetime in technology.
Yeah, no.
It's not a lifetime in a house, but it's a lifetime in technology. You'll want to be able to pull that Ethernet out and put something else in instead.
Mm-hmm.
So conduit, it's a good thing to put in some conduit right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Gary in Camarillo, California. Hi, Gary.
Hi, I got a really bad connection.
Okay, I can hear you, so go ahead and ask the question.
The question is, I got a Droid Turbo, and I was thinking about either getting the new LG V30 or the Samsung 8. Which one would you buy?
I love the LG V30. But the S8 camera is better than the LG, and more importantly for some, the screen is better. People, LG and the new Pixel 2 from Google both use LG OLED screens, and people are complaining that those screens aren't great. It doesn't bother me. I went and looked at the Pixel 2 XL, which is what I'm going to get, and by the way, Verizon does have those as well. I like it a lot. If you can go to the Verizon store, really the V30, the newest LG phone, and the Google Pixel 2 XL are very similar. Same exact screen, same exact panel. Camera-wise, I think Google's the winner on this one, but LG is putting dual cameras in. Some people like that better. On the other hand, if you don't mind, let's see, here, how can I put this? If I'm going to rank them in terms of software, I rank Google on top because it's Google Android. It's pure Android plus a few nice extensions. LG, I'm not crazy about what they do, but it's decent. Samsung, a lot of people don't like the Samsung extensions. You heard Dennis talking about the Bixby button, which is on the S8, things like that. Samsung customizes it the most. So in terms of pure Android, the Google wins. In terms of screen, either the S8 or the Note 8, absolutely a winner. Beautiful OLED screen. Samsung does their really nice AMOLED. LG's doing these P-OLEDs, which people complain about. Doesn't bother me personally, but people don't like them as much as the Samsungs. And I agree that Samsung screen is easily the best. So this one is really more an aesthetic decision. The final thing I think is very important is security. And one of the reasons I, at this point, only recommend Google Android phones if you can do it, is they're guaranteeing for 3 years to have the latest patches. They'll have them before anybody else. For instance, this crack Wi-Fi problem, Google will have a patch for that, then publish it, and LG and Samsung will get around in a week or a month or whenever to fixing it. But Google will be the first to get the fix, by far. So for me, my Android phones, as much as I love what Samsung does, I mean, their phones are aesthetically the best. And their cameras, by the way, you know, Google is touting how great their camera is. You got a 98 DXO mark. But if you dig down a little bit into the DXO ratings, it's actually the Samsung Note 8 has a better camera than the Google. It's also got two lenses. The LG a little bit below that, but not, you know, they're so close that I don't know if there's a huge difference. I think what Google's doing with this camera is very interesting. In fact, we've learned that Google has put a separate chip, it's not yet turned on, specifically to process input from the camera. There is a chip for a processor for the camera in there, and they are expected to turn that on in the next version of Oreo, which will be coming out in weeks or months. I think the developer edition is coming out soon. And that will be interesting because that's going to be for processing high dynamic range photos, a dedicated chip. So Google's position is we don't have to put two lenses in. We'll put one lens in with dual pixels, and we'll put more brains in, and that's going to give you a better image than two lenses would. You didn't ask me about the Google Pixel 2 XL. You can't. I think it's hard to get right now. Verizon's the first. They have an exclusive. That's the one I would get. And then to answer your specific question, choosing between the V30 and the Samsung S8, that's almost an aesthetic decision. The V30's newer, but I have to say the S8 screen is gorgeous. Very, very nice. That's a tough one. That one is, they're so close that it really is more personal opinion, personal choice. If you can, get into a Verizon store and look at all three. And particularly, I guess the test I would make is turn the brightness down to about halfway. If you go into the Verizon store to look at these phones, you'll notice they've turned the brightness up all the way. OLED screens are super bright. You turn them up all the way, they pop. And that sells phones. People go over there and go, wow, that's a great looking phone. That's just because it's really bright. Turn the brightness on the Pixel 2 XL, the LG V30, and the Samsung S8 or S8 Plus or Note 8. They're pretty similar. Turn it down to 50%. Turn off automatic dimming and take a look. And look really closely, and particularly look at white pages if you can. If it doesn't, the Google phone and the LG phone will have kind of a speckled appearance when it's dim on white pages and gray pages, that some people, it really bugs them. If it doesn't bug you, now that you know about it, it might bug you. You might not have noticed if I hadn't said anything. If it doesn't bug you, it doesn't bother me at all, then I'd get the Google phone. But if it does, then you're really going to opt for the Samsung. So that's the key when you go into that Verizon store. They're tethered, so you can't really test the cameras. Just, you know, if you want to go to DxO Mark and look at the reviews, and don't just look at that top line number. That's the one all the companies say, oh, we're 98. That's a combination of video and stills and a variety of factors. Look at the full review. You'll get a better sense. Nowadays, I feel like all the top line camera phones are pretty amazing. The Apple iPhone 8, the Google Pixel 2, the Samsung 8, Note 8. That Note 8 is a beautiful phone. 80, that's, you can see I'm challenged by that question. Thank you. I appreciate it, Gary. Thank you. Jim in Long Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, how you doing? I have a fairly new TV. It's about a year old. And anyway, I want to get, it has Wi-Fi. I want to get the internet on it.
Good.
My modem is in one room, and the TV is in another room. Basically, what it comes down to, I want to keep from getting, renting a router.
Have you tried it just to see how it works? Oh, I see. You don't have a router. You just have hardwired internet.
Yeah, well, I don't have the internet yet.
You're going to want to get Wi-Fi.
Well, it has Wi-Fi in it.
No, the TV does, but it sounds like your internet doesn't. Does it?
Well, I don't have internet yet either.
Oh, okay. I got it.
I'm getting internet.
So you're going to get the internet. Got it.
Right. But I don't want to get a router if that's possible.
No, you need a router if you're going to use more than one device on that internet connection. That's really all a router does. And by the way, there, you want a router for security purposes because any attacks that happen to the router, which is dumb and much less vulnerable, and not to the TV or the computer. So the router sits between you and the outside world, and that's a very good security thing. So if you want to use more than one device, if you're going to get Wi-Fi, you're probably going to want to use your phone or your laptop with it, and the TV, you got to get a router.
Yeah, I have the modem is set up in one room for the phone and my fax machine.
Is it? Well, if it's working with your phone, it has Wi-Fi. Your phone doesn't have a physical connection, so it must have Wi-Fi.
You know, I'm not sure if I do or not.
Well, when you get on your internet on the phone, you're not connected to anything, right? You're just through the air?
Yeah, right. You just connect to the fax machine. Yeah.
Who did you get your internet from? Your cable company or your phone company?
Well, I don't get it yet, but I will be getting it from the cable company.
Okay, and they'll give you a Wi-Fi router. You probably just use the one that comes with it. And that way, your phone, your fax will have to be physically connected, and your TV both can use wireless. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on a sec. Does that make sense? You'll see when you get it. They'll just put in a wireless router. They just do. He's gone. Okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Zachary from Victorville, California is next. Hi, Zachary.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
So I'm trying to connect my desktop to a 65-inch smart TV.
Yeah.
And when I'm looking
Let me
at
guess, is this for playing games?
You guessed it.
You want that lean back experience playing the games. All right, good. I like it. Yeah. So, does your desktop have an HDMI port?
Yes.
That's the easiest way to do it.
So that's how I'm connecting it, and it works. I can see my desktop on the TV.
Yeah. You just switch to that input. You put it onto, HDMI 2, and you switch to HDMI 2 on the TV, and boom. It's just like a monitor, right?
Yeah.
Except
when I try to adjust the fitting of the desktop on the screen, when I try to adjust the fitting.
Yeah.
And I go to, the Windows Home button to get into settings.
Yeah.
None of the icons work. Nothing works at all.
Interesting. Can you set it before you connect it to the TV?
I tried. I connected it to a different monitor to see, and I tried.
So the best way to do this, let me think. So the TV has what we call a native resolution. You may have to really dig into the manual or even go online to figure it out. But it'll be probably, is it a 4K or a HD TV?
HD.
So it'll be 1080, 1080 line, 1080 lines from top to bottom, and then whatever that is on the other side, 2160 by 1080 or whatever that is. That will be what we call the native resolution, dot for dot. You put the TV into a dot for dot mode. Otherwise, you'll get black bars or whatever. So you make sure that it is reproducing what it's getting. And then your laptop or desktop, you go into display settings, and you're going to choose a resolution that is as close, if not identical, to that native resolution as possible. So you're telling me you connect it to the TV, you open display settings on the Windows desktop, and you can't do anything more after that?
Yeah, that's it.
That's
Nothing.
Mm-hmm. It just freezes. You can move the mouse?
I can just move the mouse around. That's it.
But clicking things doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. 1920 by 1080. That's what it is. 1920.
Like I even tried to click on Chrome, and it wouldn't even open Chrome.
I wonder. So there's two ways to do an extended monitor. One is to have two displays. Mm-hmm. One is mirror, what they call mirroring one display. Mm-hmm. Mirroring means the screen on your computer and the screen on the TV have exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Are you in mirroring?
I might be. I can check.
But you can't change it. Or can you at least use the control panel?
I managed to get myself a control panel, but as soon as I try to change anything in control panel, nothing happens.
It gets unresponsive.
Yeah, it's unresponsive.
That's really odd. That's very strange. So you can see your whole desktop, and it looks normal on the TV.
Exactly.
You see the icons. You see the start menu. If you press on the keyboard, if you press the Windows key, does the start menu open up?
No.
No.
I can't even press the start menu, the Windows button on the desktop. Nothing opens.
So another, that's really interesting. So maybe you don't want it in mirroring. Maybe you want it in extended desktop where each screen is displaying something different. And this is interesting. I've never seen this before. Let me see if the chat room ever has. It sounds like Windows is somehow confused by this addition of this monitor, and it's really not responsive. The only thing that's moving is the mouse.
And this is odd because I've hooked this desktop up to a smaller 32-inch monitor, and it works fine.
Yeah. What kind of TV?
Samsung.
I wonder if there's something going on. The problem is, as soon as you connect it, you lose control, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't. Boy, you got me. You got me. I don't know why that would happen.
Yeah, this has been me for the past like 3 weeks.
I can't even think of a reason for that. Obviously, Windows sees this new monitor and barfs, to use a technical term. Yeah, and as you said, it works with another monitor. It's just this monitor.
Yeah.
You've tried other HDMI ports?
Yeah. I've gone through about everything. I've tried VGA. This TV doesn't have a VGA, but I've tried VGA and other monitors. It works on every other monitor I've tried except this one.
Yeah. I wonder if the Samsung is too smart.
Yeah.
it's doing something. Boy, you got me. Maybe somebody, this is an interesting idea. It's Windows 10, right?
Yeah.
So you know that you can go over to that notification panel on the right and choose tablet mode.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, try that. Obviously, you have to do that before you connect the TV. But go into tablet mode.
Okay.
And then see. I don't know why that would fix anything.
I'll try.
It's worth trying. Now, Dr. Mom's saying, do you have Samsung's Smart View enabled? I don't know why that would do anything. But it does sound like it's something to do with the TV, doesn't it?
Yeah. So this is not my TV. I'm trying to hook this up for my dad to play.
Oh, it's for your dad. What does he play?
World of Warcraft.
Of course he does. Of course he does. Samsung Smart View, the app that lets you enjoy multimedia content from your mobile and PC on your smart TV. Looks like Samsung says you have to install an app.
Oh.
So go to Samsung.com or search for Samsung Smart View. There's a Windows app. It's in the Windows Store. And you install that, and that's my guess is that Samsung. Thank you, Samsung, is doing something weird.
Okay, I'll try that. It's worth a try.
It says play content from your TV. I don't know if that's. It's specifically for Samsung smart TVs, and I think sometimes smart is dumb.
Yeah.
Yep. Too smart means dumb. So, I mean, I'm guessing that that's going to fix it, but it's worth it. Go to the Windows Store, Samsung Smart View, download and install the app. You can also put that app, by the way, and your dad might enjoy this on the phone if he has a Samsung phone or a Google phone. And it actually works on iOS as well. Or does it? Or maybe it's just the Macintosh. Maybe it's just Macintosh. But, yeah, you install it on your phone, and you can play content from your mobile phone onto your TV.
Okay.
All right, give it a try.
All right, yeah, I definitely
let me know. Thank you. Dr. Mom is brilliant.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Zachary. Good
thank
luck.
Thank you for answering me.
You're a nice boy to help your dad play World of Warcraft. We haven't seen Dad for 4 days. He hasn't emerged. We just slide food under the door. He's on a raid right now with his Class 60 Barbarian Warrior. He's tanking. David, Mira Loma, California. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a surround sound system, and my speakers are built into, it was built into the house, so they are in my ceiling. I have two fronts, two back. I'm running a subwoofer and a front speaker, and I bought a new stereo that has the 7.1, so it has two surround speakers and rear speakers.
You have to cut another hole in the wall.
Yeah, my wife will kill me.
Two more holes in the wall. No, you could get just little speakers that are connected to the last two. You know, the rear what they call the rear surround ports. You'll have to run wire back to them.
Well, can I just run it 5.1? And if I
you don't have to do 7.1. No. Yeah, it just means it's 7.1 capable.
But which speakers do I hook to? Surround or rear for my rear speaker?
Surround.
The surround.
Yeah,
okay.
It's the rear surround that is the additional two speakers in a 7.1 system. They're called rear surround. So ideally, your surround speakers are roughly at your ears, left and right. And then ideally, and then if you have two more, you have rear surrounds, they're behind you. And then get Atmos, and there'll be one in the ceiling, and now there's sound everywhere. I think you're fine with 5.1.
Okay, so I think I actually have them hooked to the rear speaker, so I unplug them and put
move it up. Yeah. And if that receiver has Odyssey or some sort of auto-tuning, once you hook that up, run that. You know, you plug in that weird microphone they give you, put it where you sit.
Yes.
Yeah, run it again. You'll need to recalibrate, and you'll know that you've got the right thing hooked up because it'll say left surround, right surround, and you'll hear coming out of those, and you'll know, hey, it's working. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Anybody, show of hands, buying a house this weekend or refinancing? Stop. If you've started the finance process, stop. I want you to go to the best lender in the country, Quicken Loans. Number one in customer satisfaction year after year after year, according to J.D. Power. I mean, number one. They're also the number two lender in the country, but you don't want to go with the number one lender because it's one of those big banks. I went with them. 4 years ago when Lisa and I bought our house, we went with the number one, the big bank. Big mistake. Took more than a month to get our mortgage. And they kept saying, well, can you fax us this? Can you fax us that? They kept coming back. We said, could you just ask for all the documents you need? Kept coming back. We went on vacation. We were faxing from a cruise ship. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm just, it's a little sensitive subject. Next time, Rocket Mortgage. It should be Rocket Mortgage from you. From Quicken Loans, best lender in the country. And this is awesome. It's all online. You can do the whole thing on your phone at an open house. And it's fast enough that before you leave the open house, you'll have the loan. How about that? Don't have to dig through boxes of paperwork. Everything they need, they can get online from you. So what happens? You go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. They ask you some basic questions. Once they've got you identified, they say, okay, we have these accounts for you. Is that right? You give us permission to access? We say yes. They crunch the numbers based on income, assets, and credit. They analyze all the factors, and they offer you loans that are right for you. You choose the down payment, the term, the rate. Say, yep, that's the one for me. and it's done. No going to the attic, no going to the bank, no waiting. It's not months, it's not weeks, it's not days, it's not hours. It's literally minutes, because computers, who'd have thunk it? Rocket Mortgage, created by Quicken Loans because they realized that the mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. They wanted something that was client-focused, that was fast, that was all about you and your convenience. You mortgage, you apply simply, you understand fully every step of the way, and you mortgage confidently. That's it in a nutshell. Rocket Mortgage at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. They're an equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Maybe you're not buying a house this weekend, but maybe you're going to go to an open house tomorrow and go, hey, this is pretty nice. Look, what? They're asking what? Oh, let's get it. And then you can just go. So bookmark it, rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches. Coming up, junky gadgets with the Gizwiz. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still call in if you use Skype out or something like that and call that number. It's a toll-free number in the U.S., so it shouldn't cost you anything on Skype. 888-826-5537 or 8888-ASK-LEO. Ron is next from Mountain View, down by Google, down Google way. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I got a Nexus 5X for my 13-year-old granddaughter.
Perfect choice.
And it's set up on Project Fi, and it working pretty well.
Very good choice.
Now her parents want me to set up parental controls for limiting screen time and preventing access to bad apps and websites.
Oh.
Also limit things like YouTube so that she can only see appropriate videos and music. So I was wondering what parental control app you recommend for Android.
Well, have you tried the built-in settings?
You mean the multi-user thing?
That would be one, and then there's the Google Play.
I've kind of got a lot of
it's limited,
work
huh?
to do because yeah. every time she wants to add an app, you have to approve it.
Yeah. Yeah, use
a pin. It'd be nice if someone did the work for me.
Yeah. For a lot of parents, that's the main one, is to keep them from buying stuff. But if they want to, like, restrict her access, probably the – this is an interesting question. At home, it's easy to do. You do it at the router. But, of course,
right, but
as soon as you turn off Wi-Fi, she can access anything she wants, right?
Right, and she takes the phone to school and stuff.
Yeah. So Google – I still would use the Google – solutions to the degree you can. Google has something, I haven't tried it, called Family Link. At least they announced it. I think it's out.
Yeah, but it's limited so that you can only use it for kids that are less than 13, or you have to lie about their age.
Well, I would lie about her age. That's interesting. I wonder why Google says only... You know, obviously, the cutoff of 13 has to do with the Child Online Protection and Privacy Act, or COPPA, which says that children 13 and younger have stricter protections, as they should, for privacy. But, you know, is there some reason you don't want to say, well, she's 11?
Well, I guess there's no good reason.
Yeah, I mean, she may not like it. I know how age is important for...
You know, you have to set it in her Google profile, so
right.
it's going to affect everything.
Yeah, it'll keep her off YouTube. Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of Google's point, right, is...
Well, Google has age limitations on each video, apparently.
Yeah, and I think that's their point, is, well, if you want to limit it on the phone, why wouldn't you want to limit it on YouTube in general?
Right.
Yeah. I don't... okay, so...
I found one app that's called Screen Time.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it limits screen time, but it doesn't do anything about bad apps and bad websites and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, I'm not an expert on this, but I will put a link in the show notes to a article. It's a little, it's a year old from a PC Magazine, though. They're quite reliable on a variety of choices. Norton has one. There's one that's been around for years called Net Nanny, but that's a subscription. I'll tell you what, I'll put a link in the show notes to this because this, oh, actually, they do have one updated for 2017. They have one of those charts. Their editor's choice is Content Watch Net Nanny 7, Symantec Norton Family Premier, and Custodian with a Q, Q-U-S-T-O-D-I-O. Those are the three editor's choice from PC Magazine. But there are others as well. Disney, you know what? An interesting one that's a hardware device is Disney's Circle. But
yeah,
again,
that's quite expensive.
Yeah,
though.
And as soon as she goes to school, it doesn't protect her at all. So
right. This
is more for in-house protection. I would look at Net Nanny, which has been around forever. It's $40. That's not horribly expensive. The Norton's a little more expensive, and even more so Custodio. But Net Nanny has been around for an awfully long time, and I think it'll do all those things you describe.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm not an expert. I haven't. My kids are old enough. I don't have to worry about that. And I was always, I have to say, as a parent, I was always nervous about this kind of thing because it incents kids to get around it, frankly. But I didn't. My kids, when they were younger, didn't have the cell phone loophole, and that's the real problem. I was able to do this on the router at home. So with their laptops and their desktops, I could control it. In fact, I still do that for our 14-year-old. So at 10 p.m., for instance, his internet goes out. Mine continues, but his goes off because he's got to go to bed. And if I don't do that, he will never go to bed. He'll stay, and he's done it. He'll stay up all night. The problem is this cell phone loophole, and I'm kind of grateful I didn't have to worry about it with my older kids because they didn't have one. But even if you've got no Wi-Fi access, Michael, our 14-year-old, he can bring his cell phone to bed. And he can play on the cell phone all night because it, you know, he's got his access to his cell carrier. So, you know, what we do is say, you know, give me the phone. Good night. That's the only thing. Give me your iPad. Give me your phone. Give me your watch. Give me whatever you got. Good night. That's the only thing you can do. In general, I think it's best to, with really little kids, of course you want to do this. But as a kid gets older, you really more important you have the conversation with them because they're going to go to friends' houses. There's always going to be a loophole. And it's really important to say, you know, you're going to see stuff online that might make you uncomfortable, might make you wonder what's going on. I want you to, if that happens, please talk to me about it. You want to kind of keep those lines of communication open. You want to have some rules. We actually have a contract with Michael about what he can and cannot do online. And have those explicit rules and have him sign it and agree to it. Those kinds of things I think are very valuable and more valuable than just kind of a mechanical blocking. A, because they can get around mechanical blocking, and B, because it lets you avoid the conversation, which is really the most important part, is that communication, talking about what they might see online. And I'm not just talking about sex. There's hate. There's you know, racism. There's vile stuff online. And it's almost inevitable they'll run across it. And so even if you're blocking it is just, you know, it gives you a false sense of security. Oh, they can't see anything now. No, believe me, they'll see stuff. You got to talk to them and really get it to the point where they can say, hey, I saw something that bothered me today and talk about it. And it can actually be, as they used to say in school, a teaching moment, a teachable moment. Carson, Orange County, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Carson.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
How old are you, Carson?
I am 12 years old.
Do you see stuff sometimes on the internet? You go, ooh.
Yeah, well, sometimes.
Yeah. Do you talk to your parents about it?
Of course.
Yeah, good. You have good parents.
My dad and I are huge fans of your show, by the way.
Hey, what's your dad's name?
My dad's name is Tony.
Hi, Tony. Tony going to buy you a new phone, huh?
Yes, he sure is.
You're a lucky man, Carson. So what's your question?
So my LG G3 broke in my backpack.
Yep.
And I was looking for a new phone within the $200, $250 range.
Okay, hang on because we got to take a break. But stay on the line because we'll talk as soon as the commercials are over, okay? We're going to help Carson buy an inexpensive but good phone. You want to stick with Android, right?
Yes.
All right, so hang on. We'll help you spend some money. We'll help Dad spend some money. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The purple tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We've been talking to Carson. He's 12. His nice LG G3, which is probably a hand-me-down from Dad, right?
No, it was a Christmas gift.
Oh, that's a nice Christmas gift. Last Christmas?
No, 2014 Christmas.
Oh, man. Oh, man. That's awesome. You deserve a nice phone because you took good care of that phone for 2 years. 3 years.
Almost three, yeah.
Almost three. Good man. So no wonder your dad's open to the idea. So you want to stick with Android? I mean, there is. You can now get into the iPhone. The SE, which is basically a 5S. Is around 300. It's in your budget if you really wanted an iPhone, but it's kind of small and I don't know. It's not great.
I don't like iPhones.
You like Android? Good man.
I do like Android phones.
Stick with Android, and if you're comfortable with Android, no reason not to. At your price range, I really like the Motorola G5 Plus.
That I was looking at.
Was it? Yeah. So here's what you give up on a sub flagship phone. You know, the flagship phones start at $650. But when you get down to $300, $200, you're not going to have as good a screen. It's going to be fine, but it's not going to be, you know, wow. And often the cameras aren't as good. But what I love about the G5 Plus is it's fast enough. Motorola keeps it very clean. They used to be a Google company, and they still have that philosophy. These are designed by their team in Chicago, which used to be Google. So I think they make really nice design decisions and hardware decisions. The screen's pretty good. The camera's actually decent. I think that's a great choice for a budget phone. It's with what I tell everybody to get. Have you looked at it at all?
Yes, I have. I really like it because I've heard it has a pretty good camera for its price range.
Exactly, yeah.
Is the OS skinned at all? Do they put bloatware on it?
Nope.
And such?
Nope. Minorly skinned. Of course, if you buy it from one of the cell companies that puts their own stuff on there, you know, those red applications from Verizon, you'll get those, but you can delete them. And Motorola is about as pure as possible. And the other thing I like about Motorola is they're keeping their phones up to date. They're getting to the Google security updates. Google now does monthly security updates, and they're getting them to them pretty quickly. You should, you know, here we are, done with October. You should absolutely have the October update, which came out, I think, October 5th. So look at that phone and see if it's updated with October. September would be okay, but you want October. Yeah. If it's anything older than September, bad idea. But Motorola is going to keep it up to date. So,
okay.
Yeah, I give that my seal of approval. Do you play any games on it? What do you do with it?
Just calling. Sometimes they go on apps. It's unschooled and stuff, but it's nothing. I'm not a core gamer on the phone.
Nice. But you do play games on an Xbox, a PlayStation?
I have a PC that I built with my father.
Oh, I like your dad more and more. So, so what do you play on your PC?
I have tons of games, but my favorite is Rainbow Six Siege.
Ah, yeah, that's a good game. That's a kind of a classic.
Yeah.
Good game. I think you are on the right track, Carson.
Thanks.
Yeah. Have fun.
Thank you.
All right. Take care and say hi to Tony for me, a.k.a. Dad. Peter, Toronto, Toronto. It says California, but I think it's Toronto, Canada.
Oh, it's Toronto, Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we have a Toronto.
Days up here.
South of the 49th. I don't think we have any. You got the only Torontos. Well, hey, Peter, good to see you. I love Toronto.
Yeah, good to talk to you. I had a question, actually, but I have a whole bunch of Sonos speakers in my home, and I've been having a lot of cutouts and things, yeah. And I went to they say that there's a lot of interference, like changing your channels can.
Yeah, so I don't know if Sonos. has two different ways to work wirelessly. The original Sonos way, it creates its own network at 2.4 gigahertz. It's not Wi-Fi. It's its own little thing. But if that doesn't work well, you can also have your Sonos use your Wi-Fi. Do you know which solution you're using? Or did you get a Sonos base station, a Sonos Connect?
Yeah, I have a Sonos Connect.
Okay. So the Sonos, when you use the Sonos Connect, you put an Ethernet cable into it from your router, and now it's right. It's you set it up through there. I also tried the Connect, thinking that would improve my Sonos, and did for a while, but in the long run, it didn't do very well. So I went back to the original Sonos Mesh, which works better. But I've noticed, you're right, interference is a problem, because 2.4 gigahertz, that's exactly where your Wi-Fi is. That's where 802.11b and gr. So if you have a modern Wi-Fi router that can go to 5 gigahertz, a dual or tri-band router, moving to 5 will kind of... And by the way, you can get a Wi-Fi analyzer. I use one all the time that'll show you where the congestion is. And everybody,
so your neighbors are...
Yeah, your neighbors are part of the problem and all of that. So if you have an Android device, there's Wi-Fi Analyzer. If you have a Windows machine, there's Insider with two S's. Download that. It'll show you all the channels that are used. It'll show you the strength. It'll give you a really good idea of where the interference is coming from, and you'll see all the Sonoses.
Okay.
So
I've been mucking around with the different channels trying to see
it. It is. Basically, it's an experiment. It's just trial and error.
Okay.
But if you can move your Wi-Fi router to 5 gig and use 5 gig, you might even turn off the 2.4 gig radio.
Mm-hmm.
That might help. Take the Connect out. But now that's a pain, because now you have to go to all the Sonos speakers and repair them, reset them up. You have to, that's a real... And I've done this so many times I can't count it. My Sonos went downhill when I started setting up a mesh system in my house. My Wi-Fi, I set up strong Wi-Fi in my house, and that conflicted with the Sonos. I got the Connect to see if that would help. And now I don't use the Connect anymore. You just have to play with it.
But the Connect is so great because you can move back and forth between your own system.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
You're using it as a bridge to your stereo.
Bridge to my stereo.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
You could still use that, just unplug the Ethernet.
Okay.
Because that bridge has its own Wi-Fi built in as well.
Yeah.
So you can still use it. I didn't get the Connect. I got the Boost, which was...
Yeah,
don't get the Boost.
Yeah.
Unless nothing else will fix it, then you can try the Boost. The Boost is a standalone device that connects via Ethernet that becomes, the kind of like the Sonos base station access point. I've tried everything. I've got it pretty stable now, although my Sonos has this new habit, just started yesterday, of fading in and out, which I've never heard of.
That's what it is. It's like even what you show.
It's not just dropping out. It's just going, the volume's going up and down.
Yeah, it just cuts out. And then
I'm wondering if this is related to the new 8.1 update, which I just got, and I presume you did too, because I never had this before, and all of a sudden, that's a weird thing.
Yeah,
that's not connectivity. I don't know what that is. That's something weird going on with the Sonos. We'll see if we can figure that out. Dr. Mom says the same thing's happening to her. Yeah, there's something going on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, Dr. Mom, you're saying it's not silencing it, it's just lowering the sound? That's interesting. So that's, Dr. Mom, that's what she was talking about, where she said it's lowering the sound so that it can hear you better. Thank you. They probably have some quirks to work out. That's my guess with this Sonos integration. Thanks to Michael for keeping our spirits lifted. John on the line from Oxnard, California. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Just fine, thank you. I have a new car that I was surprised to find has no CD player.
Welcome to the modern world, John.
It has three ports, USB ports, and you plug in, I guess you load a bunch of MP3s onto it, and you plug it in.
That's
and,
the idea,
You got a ton of music, but it doesn't play anything. Like if I load the Beatles' White Album, you know, I want to hear those songs.
Yeah.
It jumps all over the place.
Oh, it's not playing them in order. So
is there a software package?
Well, what they really expect you to do is not to use their little thing, but to use your iPhone or your smartphone and play it that way.
Oh.
Do you see what I'm saying? So apparently they have some storage in the car that you can put stuff onto?
Well, no, there's no storage in the car. The storage is on the thumb drive. It's a Corvette.
Ah, oh, how nice. What color?
It's red and it's 650 horsepower, so it's intimidating.
John, you have my wife's car. She's always wanted a little red Corvette.
Well,
not so little, is it? Man.
No, it's not.
Is this your dream to get this car?
I've had a lot of Corvettes in my life. This one is by far the neatest.
Is it a 2017?
Yeah.
Nice. So you recommend them? I'm trying to convince her to buy a Corvette, to be honest, because she loves them.
I love Corvettes.
I asked her yesterday, literally, we went by a bright red Camaro. I said, would you prefer a Corvette or a Camaro? She said, I want a Vette. I said, good, we're getting
Camaros you one. Are limited. They're very limited. If you ever sit in one, you feel like you're in one of those World War II turrets at Normandy Beach. At least that's my thought.
It feels like a Vette would be even more like that, right? Because you're very low, but it's a sports car feeling.
Much more forgiving, and it even has cameras in front,
nice.
So you can see where you're bumping
nice.
Into.
I love modern car technology, but you've uncovered one flaw in it. They don't do CD players. It's all USB. So you could just play it from a thumb drive, but the problem is, as you noted, it doesn't really. I don't know what the Chevy interface is on the screen, but it sounds like
it's Apple. It's the Apple CarPlay.
Oh, it's using CarPlay.
Yes,
but you don't have an iPhone.
I do have an iPhone, and you know I can.
So that would be the best way to do it.
Is use
because then you use iTunes.
Pandora, I guess.
Well, or you can use iTunes, and you could say play the White Album, and it would play it in order.
Oh, I've never played that much with iTunes because it's confusing to me. But if I learned it, I guess I could do
that.
Yeah,
you don't. Not even iTunes on the desktop. Just make sure all the music you want is on your iPhone, and then when you get in and the CarPlay comes up, you see a music button.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling that iTunes because that's really what's happening. Is that music button is iTunes, but it's the.
Well, I've heard you complain about iTunes.
Yeah, that's the desktop version. This is the mobile. This is the music player on an iPhone, basically.
Oh, okay.
And that will let you play. So you can pick artists, but you can also. So if you pick Beatles, it could play all the Beatles. You could pick albums. So you could pick the White Album and just say, play this sequentially. There's even settings. I'm not sure if they show up on CarPlay, but there's settings to have no pause, as you would want with the White Album, no pause between the tracks, things like that. You can choose by genre. You can have playlists. That would be another solution, by the way, is to create a playlist on your phone in the order that you want, and it will then play it in the order that you want.
Okay, well, I'll play around with that.
Yeah, don't use the thumb drive, because the thumb drive doesn't really give the car much, you know, control. But they really expect you to use it, since it has CarPlay in it. Now I've got to get it for my wife.
The songs. Well, believe me, go to your nearest Chevy dealer. They're discounting the hell out of them right now. Go to your nearest Chevy dealer, and the assembly plant's closed down until November because they're doing some modernizing, I guess, in Kentucky. But they're discounting them pretty heavily. Test drive a Corvette. And
she wants one. She wants one. She's always wanted one.
You won't walk away without one.
She has a 72 Camaro she restored, but she really wants a Vette. So the other way you could do this, if you still want to use the thumb drive, it's just going to play the songs alphabetically. So on the thumb drive, the way to do that is to go in and change the names to have a number in front, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
And that's what I was kind of wondering. Is there a software program I can...
Just plug it into your computer. You can see it, and you can literally rename it. If you want to get more sophisticated, are you Windows or Mac?
Windows.
I recommend there's a couple of very good music managers for Windows, but the one I almost always recommend is called... I always want to say Monkey, but it's not Monkey. Is it Ape? Is it, what is the name of the monkey, of the music player? The chat room, help me. There is a good program which I've used, MP3 Tag, but I don't think it's in the MP3. I think it's in the file name for the USB. So let me, what is the name of it? Say again? Media Monkey. Thank you. Media Monkey.
Okay.
It's a free program. David got it. He's sitting in our, see, David, you have to now stay here for the rest of the show and help me with all the answers to all the questions. David says, I'll do it. Media Monkey is great for doing all that stuff, managing it. It'll even get the album art and stuff, and CarPlay will display the album art so you can see the beautiful white album.
Okay, and your idea about the iPhone seems like a real good.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what they expect you to do with CarPlay. It's nice that it has
and
CarPlay.
And now the new
that's
iPhone,
great.
You can go up to 256, right?
Sure can. That's, yeah, that's a lot of music. That's enough music to drive coast to coast three times.
Okay.
Which you might want to do when you're a vet. Do you go on long road trips in that thing?
It's only got 2,300 miles on it right now, but
it sounds beautiful. What's the miles per gallon on that?
This one has the higher horsepower engine. There was a $1,300 gas guzzler tax on it.
Okay, I get the idea. I'm still going to talk her into it.
You should, really.
Marsworm also says,
wonderful cars.
Clementine Player, that was the other one I was thinking of, which is an open source and free product, is very good too. I like Media Monkey. It's worth it. Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for making my wife a happy woman. I didn't ask how much it costs. If you have to ask... let's see. I got a little time left. Let's see if we can help Mary here. Mary in Vista, California. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I want to replace my printer, and I keep hearing you talk about the EcoTank, and so I would like that. Not that I do a lot of printing, but I just hate replacing.
Yeah. So the EcoTank, which is an Epson's a sponsor from Epson, and they have a variety of them.
Yeah,
if you don't print a lot, it's not great because inkjets in general, if you don't print a lot, get clogged.
Okay.
Do you print every day?
No.
Yeah. So an inkjet is not the best choice if you don't print a lot. I would get an inexpensive laser printer. Epson makes some. Brother makes very good ones. They're no more expensive than an inkjet, but they're really designed for low printing numbers of pages, and actually the cost per page is less. And when you change the toner cartridge, it lasts 5,000 pages. It's not like inkjet cartridges, so you don't have to do it very often. Highly recommend that if you don't print pretty regularly. Inkjets get clogged. It's just kind of the nature of it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. She hung up. My Tesla would be to vet, but what happens with electric engines is you get that acceleration and you get the speed, unless they've governed it, but the engine gets hot, and after a while, like a few miles, you go, oh, can't keep this up. But I don't know anywhere you can drive 140 miles an hour for more than a minute or two. Our show today brought to you by those great folks at Fracture. Let me get my Fractures. Fracture's not only a sponsor, we're regular customers. So what is Fracture? Well, you know, I know you have a great picture. You know, your Instagram, your Facebook, maybe in your photo album. I know you have pictures that you love of your family, of your friends. But you don't, how often do you go look at them? What we've done, what Lisa and I have realized, is if you print them and frame them on the wall, you see them. And we change them regularly. And then we discovered printing on glass with Fracture. And I have to tell you, this is mind-boggling. This is a picture I love, a black and white picture I did of my son at his high school graduation. I feel like he looks like Sinatra in the Rat Pack. And he looks like he's about to kill me. And I just love it. And I like having it on the wall. But I have to tell you something. When you print on glass with Fracture, something else happens. The contrast, the color, the tonality, it just pops. Now, Fracture has a variety of sizes. It's a photo decor company that's out to rescue your favorite images. This is Michael's eighth grade graduation. Lisa made that. It's a beautiful little print. We put borders on them, but you don't. You can do a full bleed, and it's a way of taking those pictures that you love. Here's my my son and my daughter, and I like doing the black and white. You can do that. They have an advanced editor, lets you completely control the crop, the border, and there's something about printing on glass. They've got a great system so that these come completely, safe. This is actually in the mounting that it comes in. The mounting includes the mounting hardware, and every fracture is ready to just put up on the wall. See, they have a hook there that you could hook it up. Actually, because this one's tall, they put that at the top like that. I'm just a big fan. Let me show you how big they go. They go as small as 4.8 inches by 6.4 inches. But let me show you the biggest one, which is 21.6 by 28.8. You have to have a picture you really love for that one. And This is my favorite picture from our last vacation in the Galapagos. It's a seal yelling at a flightless cormorant. Look how big that is, and look how beautiful it is. The color, it feels like the seal's right there, right with you. Fractures come with a 60-day happiness guarantee, so you're sure to love your order. It's not perfect, send it back. Every fracture's handmade in Gainesville, Florida, from U.S. source materials in their carbon-neutral factory. It's just awesome. Try it right now. We're going to get you 15% off your first order. Just pick some of your favorite photos. Put them on the wall, and you'll see what a difference it makes to just have those photos there, especially when they're printed on glass. And by the way, holidays are coming. Grandma going to get this. That is a nice gift. Fracture.me. Use the code TECH15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. Fracture.me. Offer code TECH15. We thank Fracture for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, as always, as we wind down for a Saturday, we say hello to Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and our Gizwiz, because he's the wizard of gizmos and gadgets. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing?
I am well. I'm celebrating my cumpleaños, even though it's not. With my Chevy's sombrero.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks good.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Roberto brought that by for me.
He said, perfect.
He said he told you, because he was at your event at the boat basin.
Yeah, he came to, he came a little late, so he came directly to the Gizneyland studio.
Oh, that's nice. So he's been to your studio.
Took some pictures and stuff. Yeah.
So did he make you wear the hat?
I don't think he had that with him.
He told me
it was going to be for you.
He told me that he was going to make, darn it, he suckered again. So what do you got? What do you got for us?
So, Leo, I have, last week we had kind of a serious thing with the anchor projector. So I was at a press event and I walked in and this guy, it just broke me up. And I knew what I was looking at was a total illusion, but have you heard about piggyback or carry me costumes?
No, but it is Halloween's coming and
Coming and these are for parties. The one I saw is great for Christmas parties. So it's a little elf carrying this big guy.
Oh, I've seen people do this. Yes. So it looks like you are the being piggybacked on something. Right?
Exactly. It can be a little horse. It can be an elephant. In this case, I think the funniest one is the elf. It's like this little elf is walking around with his arms out carrying you.
Or how about, it looks like they've got a presidential piggyback.
Oh my God.
You can ride the Cheeto. Look at that.
Yeah. And they're very cleverly that they're.
So wait a minute. So it's your legs are going into the costume. So you're walking.
You're walking and wearing the costume, but the costume stops at your waist, and so the rest of you is up in the air.
Oh, look, they got a Mario.
Oh my God! You know you found a better list than I have. Amazon has a ton of them, but they don't have Mario.
This is from morphsuits.com. Is that the same?
No, there's a lot of different companies, but they're all about the same price.
$45. This is not bad.
Yeah, the stuff on Amazon is $42 to $46. So they're all, but it's a very different kind of look, and I think it's very funny and very easy to get into. Actually, I went to...
The nice thing is, it's like pulling on a pair of pants. You don't have to do anything else. You got a costume.
No makeup. No.
Nothing.
No, it's
a Power Ranger, an Oompa Loompa, a leprechaun, a gorilla. Wow, you could just... There's pretty much everything you'd want. Teddy bear, frog...
You can ride a T-Rex if you want.
Oh, I like the T-Rex.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
That's pretty neat. $45. Wow. Do they come in sizes?
You know what? They do. Actually, they do. On Amazon, it looks like you click adult and an extra large.
I'm going to buy this now because Halloween's only 10 days away. I hope I can get it.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, you have to... send me a picture, but you have to post pictures of you in it.
Is there a picture of you doing this on gizwiz.biz, your website?
No, there's a picture of my favorite one. There's a picture of the guy riding the little elf. And actually, I believe it was that guy who was at this event. And I said, how can you be that mean?
Yes, that poor elf has to carry you around all night.
That poor little elf is carrying.
That is, and does it look, I mean, how does it look?
It looks really good. It looks very, especially when I walked into the room, the guy was probably 20 feet away or 15 feet away. And for a minute, you think, what's
going on here?
What's going on here?
Did he hire a child to carry him around?
Yeah. Is that a young weightlifter holding that guy up?
Oh, they've got a unicorn. Oh. Yeah. I like this.
It's great fun. And I went to a benefit for Little Shelter Thursday, and there was somebody, I think she had taken the unicorn and made herself into Lady Godiva up at the top.
Oh, goodness.
Putting on, she had a lot of hair.
I wonder if I got a blonde wig.
You know, you could do it. Lord, if it doesn't work out, you're Lord Godiva.
I'll be Lord Godiva. They say, who are you? I'm Lord Godiva, lady's husband.
There you go. There you go.
You got me going, Dick.
Good.
you'll find a link to this directly to Amazon from Dick's page, gizwiz.biz. Just click the Tech Guy, GizWiz Visits the Tech Guy link. While you're there, though, do play the What the Heck Is It contest. Because I think are you almost wrapping up?
Like 10 more days.
You got 10 days.
Exactly 10 days.
To win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, the Stranger Things episode edition. And what the... That's the winners of last time. This is the last one. This is the new one, which looks like, I don't know, dentures for it or something like that. I don't know.
That's a good guess.
Pennywise's dentures. That's what I'm thinking.
That's a good guess.
Yeah.
That's a good guess.
See, if I sent that in, I could perhaps get an autographed copy of that.
You could. Yep, you can. Employees of Twitter are eligible.
go to gizwiz.biz while you're there. Check out all the other things, including Dick's fabulous podcast, The GizWiz, at gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure. Have a great
Halloween. I will see you next week.
Halloween. We'll talk about your costume next week. I like that. I like that. I can't decide which one I should write, who I should be writing. Our show today brought to you, as always, and really in many ways, by Carbonite. See, because we might not have a show if my hard drive died. Fortunately, I've got Carbonite backing it up, so I don't have to worry. Carbonite is a longstanding valued partner of our show and, frankly, of my business and even my home, because I use Carbonite everywhere. You know, I'm sure Carbonite is a cloud backup provider. It's the kind of thing you might recommend to your tech-savvy and non-tech-savvy friends and family. Simple, affordable data backup. But Carbonite is always evolving. And one of the things Carbonite's really been doing lately is just going great guns with their business offerings. Carbonite serves a fast-growing roster of companies requiring more robust data protection solutions. Now they have the E-Vault, which gives you on-premises backup that backs up then to the Carbonite Cloud, the DoubleTake technologies they just acquired, data migration services, which Help companies avoid getting locked into any one cloud provider. They can move your business data safely and securely to and from clouds and data centers. Their high availability platform, which allows you to keep systems functioning through disasters like ransomware, tornadoes, fires, hurricanes. Carbonite's remarkable. They've been evolving at an amazing rate. So check out Carbonite.com. Learn more about not only Carbonite protection for your home, but Carbonite cloud protection for your business. They are the data protection experts. Carbonite.com. David, Colorado Springs, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi,
hello.
David.
Hi. I've been using an iPhone since the 4S, and now I use a 7 Plus. I've also been producing and creating podcasts for a while now, but I don't use the workflow tools from Apple because I have a PC.
Yeah.
But the Google apps have been incredible, which has kind of made me curious about the Pixel 2 XL. But I wasn't sure if I should just be looking at it because it has the Google name on it or...
Well, all the Google apps are available on iOS. That's one of the deals they made. In fact, Apple, which had kicked Google off its search engine for Safari, has re-upped. And so Google's really very much in a partnership with Apple. So I don't think you ever have to worry about Google apps leaving the iPhone. If you like the iPhone, you're probably getting a almost exactly the same experience as on a Google phone. Maybe even, in some cases, this has been the case, better. However, I think the Pixel 2 XL in particular is a very worthy contender against the iPhone. I have to review them all. And the two phones I'm sure I'll be carrying, if you ask me in a month, will be an iPhone and the Google Pixel 2 XL. It's a beautiful phone. So I don't want to recommend against it. There is one argument in Apple's favor. I think from a security point of view, you're a little safer on iOS. So if that's an issue for you, that might be something to keep in mind. But I think, yeah. What's the name of your podcast?
Dave and Isaac Discuss.
And in you're Dave and he's Isaac.
That's right. That's my brother.
Oh, what fun. Well, I'll have to listen to it. Thanks for calling, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Meanwhile, have a great geek week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.